The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to the Paddy Power Half Hour. It does exactly what it says in the tin. We're going to be here for the next half an hour to preview the weekend's Premier League action. Joined in the studio by Enda Call and Ronan Mullen. Good afternoon, lads. We'll get straight into it. First game tomorrow in just over 24 hours. 12:30 kickoff. Sheffield United and Liverpool. And Sheffield United going for this Merseyside double after winning last week against Everton. And Chris Wilder rested all his players for the League Cup. And he was asked about the visit of Liverpool. He said, the European champions are coming to Bramall Lane. And you could tell by his voice that he was looking forward to this. Have they any chance?
No.
No?
Yeah. We'd be as well moving on to another game because Sheffield just don't have a chance in this one.
Why not?
Champions elect, he should have said.
No. Champions elect, we'll talk about them after.
Okay? I already called it 2 weeks ago. I don't know why we're even doing this. Liverpool, the title's over, Phil.
It's not. Six games in.
All they have to do is navigate the rest of the 75% of the season and the title's theirs.
Yeah. Navigate.
Just how that works.
Navigate injury problems, a World Club Championship. Who knows what will happen?
Yeah. Do you think the Liverpool players are going to get tired eventually?
There's a winter break this year. That certainly helps. When I say a winter break, I think a week.
Yeah.
And it's in February, which Klopp obviously would have been used to when he was with Dortmund, and it's something he really struggled with. Actually, didn't when he came over to Liverpool, they really struggled in January. Their form would just fall off the cliff because they didn't have the energy. But he's got that all in gear now. But
there is a fear factor about Liverpool now that there probably wasn't last year, in the sense that people know if they don't turn up with some sort of decent game plan, they're going to get an absolute tanking. And Wilder made the point himself that it could turn into 10 at the back. And he said it a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but you can actually see it tomorrow. It's going to be banks of four and trying to frustrate Liverpool. And there was a point early in the Klopp reign where that would have been an issue, because you'll remember 0-0 draws and frustration where they just couldn't break teams down and they were knocking balls into Benteke and it just wasn't working. And they managed to like turn it around. And in the last 12 months, they've really turned the corner in that regard. Subtlety of movement in the front three, for one, and even Fabinho, like the delivery has improved no end. And Trent Alexander-Arnold, there are some doubts around his defensive capabilities, probably rightly so. But what he offers, like in terms of his delivery, he's like another midfielder, really.
Yeah, be interesting.
He's not a conventional right back.
It's going to be a good test for Enda Stevens tomorrow. And obviously the fact that they play, well, what will turn into a five at the back, but Enda Stevens going directly up against Trent Alexander-Arnold. Is it unfair that it seems to come with, when we talk about Alexander-Arnold, what a great player he is, and then but we always hear, but, you know, you question him defensively.
Yeah, but I think the game has moved on from the stage where you don't even have to question him defensively because he's not a conventional defender.
Yeah.
So his job isn't to defend, like, say, the likes of Gary Neville, who's getting forward, would have had to get back as well. Like, the game has moved on completely from that, and the book has been passed to the centre defensive midfielders who are supposed to get back into his position, and the defensive centre-back partnership, be that Van Dijk, be that Lovren, be that Matip, whatever, they're supposed to be covering him. So
yeah,
the onus is on them to defend, not on Trent. And what Trent gives you going forward is much more valuable to the team than what he does defensively.
Yeah, and he showed that last week at Stamford Bridge with the goal. And another thing as well with the front three, there's a little bit of doubt over Mane. Now, Jurgen Klopp has done his press conference and, you know, I think he's going to be all right. He picked up a dead leg and he sat out training, but he'll play tomorrow. Is he the most important player in that front three now?
Yeah, it's a funny one because I think the common wisdom was that Salah was the most talented of the three and Mane was just in better form last season. But now I just think Mane is actually the best player of the three, and he is definitely the fulcrum of that front three. When he's humming, the rest of them sort of are in tune. Firmino is obviously a bit more complimentary, but has been really contributing big goals this season. And Salah probably still is the X factor in terms of he can do things that maybe everyone else on the pitch can't. But in terms of consistent 7, 8, 9s out of 10, I think Mane is the man for Liverpool.
Yeah, if I was to say to you, Enda, right, the front three, you can only have two of them for tomorrow. What two do you go with?
You're probably going with Mane and Firmino.
Yeah, and that's kind of goes back to what you were saying. It seems a bit mad because Salah is the one that tends to get people excited and get them off their seats and he gets the headlines. But that's kind of where they're at now.
Well, if you think of the two players that are going to gel equally together, it's going to be Firmino and Mane because they're less selfish than Salah. And Salah's a fantastic player and all that, but I feel like he's more replaceable in this Liverpool team. Not in the sense that he's a replaceable player and you just get them at the shop, but like if they sold Salah in the morning, they'd get a lot of money and they'd be able to replace him with a player that's going to do as good a job as him. Whereas I feel that Mane and Firmino have this relationship that you could play both of them up top by themselves and they'd do a job. Whereas we saw last year when Salah was playing more centrally with Firmino, it just didn't work at all. So yeah, I'd probably go with Mane and Firmino at this stage.
The record Liverpool have against not only newly promoted teams, but against teams outside the top six. You're going back a couple of years now for the last time Jurgen Klopp's side lost against a team outside the top six. So they just have become so reliable against these teams that it is hard to see anything other than the win. Worst case scenario, maybe they can't break Sheffield United down. But, you know, Sheffield United, they'll want to have a go.
But Liverpool haven't got a fantastic record at Bramall Lane in 1990, I think, the last win. Obviously, those are misnomers a little bit because Sheffield United have been out of the league a long time. My abiding memory of this fixture, I don't know if you remember, is when Steven Gerrard dived at Bramall Lane. Remember this? And Robbie Fowler tucked away the penalty.
Who was in charge of Sheffield United?
You're going to have Neil Warnock.
I'd say he took it well.
Yeah, it was one of those where Steven Gerrard dived out of a tackle that was about to happen. Got the penalty and it was a big storm at the time.
Gerrard didn't dive wrong.
No, he didn't dive.
He wasn't that kind of player.
English players don't dive.
He wasn't that kind of player.
So is he meant to stand there and get absolutely...
About a 13-year-old incident, but here we are.
Is he meant to stand there and get absolutely taken out of it?
Was there contact? Robbie Fowler didn't care. He stepped up, tucked it away. And it,
yeah.
You mean Robbie Fowler didn't miss the penalty on purpose because he's just... He's a nice kind of player, that kind of professional.
He's a nice guy.
Well, if he did miss it, Jason McAteer would have been standing by knocking the rebound. Okay, that's the half 12 game. I think we all expect Liverpool to win. It's such early days, but it just means then going into the half 5 game, which is Everton and Manchester City. City are 8 points behind Liverpool. Now, before we get into City, Everton, Marco Silva. He is the favourite now to be the next Premier League manager to lose his job. And they beat Sheffield Wednesday in the League Cup during the week. Dominic Calvert-Lewin scored a couple of goals. But you kind of feel he's on borrowed time, don't you?
Yeah. And you mentioned their conditioning in a previous show. And their susceptibility from set pieces is bordering on a joke at this stage. They remind me a bit of Scotland in the rugby, where they've talked a big game for years and they've never really progressed at all. The illuminating game for me last season was against Liverpool at Goodison, where they were talking a big game, and it was just like old Everton, you know, sat back and tried to frustrate Liverpool. They haven't really made any progression since David Moyes left. They had purple patches under Roberto Martinez, but look, in the grand scheme of things, like, where are they? Have they improved with all the money they've spent? I don't think they have.
No, I'm buying the wrong players.
What is the plan for Everton? Because you think back to a few years ago, they beat Man City 4-0. Guardiola was in charge, and that was Koeman's team, and Lukaku scored, and there was a real good feeling. And then, obviously, the start of the next season, things went wrong. Koeman was fired. They bring in Big Sam. That was a disaster. Then Marco Silva, they wanted him when he was doing well at Watford. Mm. But then, when they actually went to get him, you know, his reputation had been tarnished by that Watford, the way things finished. And it kind of looks like it's going down the same route for him.
Yeah, I wouldn't look too much into the timing of Marco Silva's move. I would just look at more of the general lack of plan, like you mentioned, at Everton, because like a few years ago we were talking about their defence, how they don't have anybody to line up to replace Jack Yelka when he eventually is a bit older and is going out of the team. They seem to...
He came on last week for Sheffield United.
And like they've got a decent partnership between Michael Keane and... Yerry Mina, but it's only decent, it's only fine. But the problem going forward is just, it's an absolute joke. Like, we were chatting about this on the football show last night with Kevin Kilbane and Leon Osman, and there's only been four players for Everton that have scored more than 15 goals a season. And that goes as far back as Cotty, Yakubu and Kinchelskis.
Tony Cotty, really?
And then the other one is Lukaku, and he did that three seasons in a row. And if you look at look at the forward line that they've brought in, Richarlison has 2 goals this season. Iwobi, 1 goal. Theo Walcott, none. He's come off the bench 4 times.
Great pace.
Moise Keane, no goals this season, and he said he would be happy with 7. That's the kind of players you're bringing in. Calvert-Lewin, hasn't hit the heights that you expect. Bernard isn't going to get you 15 goals a season. So what are they doing? Why are they bringing in these players? They need to bring in a proper striker. And it's been a consistent problem at Everton over the last couple of years. I was looking at the signings of their forwards, and they're just buying players that have always been hot and cold and are never going to be consistent for you. They brought in Yannick Bolasie, Cenk Tosun, Klaassen, Enner Valencia, Nias, Aaron Lennon, Kevin Morales. That's the forward line they've brought in the last 4 years. Not a single one of them is going to get you over 20 goals a season.
Remember Umar Nias didn't get a locker? Remember they didn't give him a locker? He got back in.
He didn't deserve one.
That was cruel.
It was. But another issue they have, if you look, under Marco Silva, they've gone behind in 21 games. They haven't won any of them. They've only picked up 4 points. So they've lost 17 of those games. That would suggest that there's not much character in this team, that when the chips are down, they can dig out a result.
Well, if you look at the team, there's no battlers in that team. They sold the last one.
Seamus Coleman.
Well, except for Seamus Coleman, you know, yeah. Fine Donegal man, you know.
Yeah.
But if they sold the last one apart from him to PSG, and he's hit the heights.
He's been brilliant, by the way.
He's been absolutely phenomenal. And then, so who else do they have in the team that's going to pull the game up by the scruff of the neck and, you know, actually bring them into a battle? I don't think there's anybody in the midfield anyway, for sure. And in that forward line, you're not looking at anybody to get you a goal when you need one. So I don't know what the issue is.
Yeah, actually, that midfield unit is a bit of a worry, Ronan, because Andre Gomes is injured at the moment. You're looking at Fabian Delph and Morgan Schneiderlin in midfield. And
neither of them could cut it in Manchester. And Schneiderlin in particular. Fabian Delph, Leon Osman made the point in just on the character issue you raised there, that he is a good lad in the dressing room and he kind of gets everyone around him going. But in terms of star quality, everyone thought Gomez was going to be the solution. He started last season so well, and in the Liverpool Everton game at Anfield, he was phenomenal.
Brilliant. Yeah,
and everyone thought he could be a top four player. But you've seen now the inconsistency and probably his little bit of an injury-prone tendency, that's why he's never really kicked on to the top level. But they are quite short now in midfield.
Yeah, and I think with signing Keane from Juventus, we just know that there's potential there. But it seems like a bit of a risk to hang it all on a young player that's coming into the Premier League, never played in the Premier League, hasn't actually started that many games in Serie A. I said there is potential there, but it doesn't exactly help when he's not getting any game time.
No, and you are looking, you can't blame him for everything that's going on at Everton at the minute, but at the same time, you do have to question the transfer policy, because the last couple of years they've been looking at Calvert-Lewin to be their main man up front, and he's a young lad as well, and it's kind of like what's happening at Manchester United at the minute, where they're relying on these young players, inexperienced, not that physical, to drag them through these games. And if you don't have the star quality, say an Mbappe or a Rashford, then these players aren't going to do it for you, especially when you're going up against some of the best players in the world, and especially when you're going up against a team like Man City. And midfield, we've mentioned how bad Everton are in midfield at the minute. Man City have the best midfield in the world at the minute. So they're really going to struggle this weekend.
Before we get into Man City, we mentioned Seamus Coleman. He was taken off last week when they were chasing the game against Sheffield United. They brought on Walcott. Coleman was one of their better performers. Should he be worried, though? Sidibe started in the League Cup during the week. You know, he was brought in. He's actually looks like a decent... We know he's a very good player. But is Coleman going to be taken out of the team? He's the club captain.
I don't think he is at this point. I think he's already cemented his stamp on the game, and he's been made club captain at the start of the season. But you can't really read too much into that. But I think if you look back at his form last year, he really started to pick it up coming the end of the season. And Marco Silva, I think, has identified Coleman as one of these players that he's going to need, that's going to actually... He's going to lead by example, and he's going to give you a 7 to 8 out of 10 performance week in, week out. But he's coming up against a really strong Man City forward line that could cause him some issues with pace. Like, if you're looking at Sterling, getting in behind him, he could struggle with that. He struggled with Mane last year. So maybe Marco Silva might go for a little bit pacier with Sidibe at right back.
But
I think Seamus Coleman has cemented himself as a starter for this Everton team. I can't see him falling out anytime soon.
Like, how hot is the hot seat for Marco Silva? Like, does a bad result this weekend...
That's what I'm wondering. I kind of felt after last weekend, if they'd lost to Sheffield Wednesday, and I think, do we all expect them to lose tomorrow?
I think this is the nature of the defeat, really, isn't it? Yeah.
So, well, they're not. I'd be very surprised if they lost 8-0 like Watford did last weekend. But if they were to be beaten 3 or 4-0,
like, can you see the fans streaming out of Goodison?
They did last week, and there wasn't that many of them left when the full-time whistle went. But those that were left at Goodison Park, they let their feelings be known. The loud boos, and the worry was, like, and Chris Wilder said it after the game last week, Sheffield United weren't even good. They didn't have to be. He actually said he was disappointed with the performance. So if he's saying that, can you imagine what Marco Silva must be thinking about how his team played?
Javi Gracia to replace him if he goes?
Yeah.
No. That's like it's an Everton move, isn't it?
Well, that's it. Like, if they do get rid of Marco Silva, who goes in? But let's look at Man City. We know that Laporte is out, and people have talked about, you know, can they survive without Laporte? Can they do it without Stones, like Fernandinho and Otamendi? But the problem opposition teams are going to have is, can you get the ball off them to actually test them?
Yeah, they were spectacular last weekend, and I think almost tongue-in-cheek we were talking about the Watford-Man City FA Cup final, and it might be a repeat of that, and they just blew that out of the water. They exceeded that, and like when they're purring at that level, like, no one's going to stop them realistically, and they're going to go to Goodison Park. Like in previous title chasing teams, maybe you go to grounds like Goodison Park and maybe try and keep it tight for the first 15 minutes. City don't do that. They just go play their game, and as you said, it's up to Everton. The initiative has to be with them to try and get the ball off City, and it's easier said than done.
What would worry me though is that after the Norwich defeat, before going into that Watford game, Rodri was talking to the press, and he said that Norwich defeat really, really hurt the City team.
Yeah.
And that they wanted to go out and destroy teams now.
Yeah.
And then they went out and did that to Watford. So you'd worry about Everton as well.
Yeah.
If Man City want to turn it on, they can turn it on, and they probably will.
It seems like Norwich may have poked the bear and got them angry. And even watching the game last week, 5-0 up after 18 minutes, and they could have won by more than 8, you feel. And you feel that they could do that to a lot more teams. There's worse teams in the Premier League than Watford.
Yeah, it's interesting because the thing that used to be thrown at Guardiola when he was in La Liga was, you know, flat track bully, blowing away these teams that most casual football fans probably never heard of. But now he's come to England and they've done this on like routinely. They're just destroying decent teams. Like Watford put it up to Arsenal in a big way the previous week, so it's not as if they're nobodies. And as you said, there's going to be a lot more cannon fodder for them this season.
Yeah, and Kevin De Bruyne is in unbelievable form. Like
That was one of the best performances I've ever seen in a Premier League pitch.
They've got the two Footballer of the Year, Premier League Footballer of the Year nominees probably in their team, so they're going to take some stopping, I think.
Yeah, and just remember, our football coverage is brought to you with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, you can visit dunlewy.net. Manchester United and Arsenal. This was always a tasty fixture. It's on Monday, and you have to go back to 2006 for the last time Arsenal won a Premier League game at Old Trafford. Emmanuel Adebayor scored. A certain Ole Gunnar Solskjaer came on for United in the second half. And you're starting to wonder, how long is Solskjaer going to be in charge at United for?
Well, it feels like 2006 since this was either of these sides actually competed for a league title.
Yeah.
This is a battle for sixth. That's what this is. That's what United and Arsenal have become.
Fourth, no?
No. Well, I currently on league form, and on squad depth and quality, I would have Leicester ahead of both these sides.
Really? I don't know. I think we'll get into Leicester in a bit because I know they're playing Newcastle on Sunday. And they beat Spurs last week and it looks great. But I think we saw at Old Trafford when Leicester went there, what you'll see a lot from Leicester is where they'll have plenty of possession. It'll be lovely to watch, but there won't be any cut and thrust and they won't get as many points as they should.
Yeah.
I think you've been maybe... You've bought into the Brendan Rodgers smile a bit, have you?
I wouldn't buy into that, man.
No?
Not after what he did to Celtic.
But going back to United Arsenal, do you not think one of them is capable of finishing in the top four? Sure, Liverpool and City are off in their own league. Spurs are hardly formidable at the moment.
I probably was being harsh on Arsenal. In fairness to Arsenal, the difference between these two sides at the minute, even though neither of them have hit the heights of what they should. Arsenal have the guts of a squad still to come back, and a couple of them came back during the week there as well.
Two fullbacks,
which are badly needed. They really need to tighten up that defence, and I think Kieran Tierney will do that as well as Bellerin. And Torreira came back as well. So you're looking at those three players as potential starters. probably will be starters.
Well, the big news is Granit Xhaka is the captain now. That is decided. So does that mean he starts every week?
That's what would worry me about that decision. Because you're looking at that team and, like, unless he's changing the formation a little bit and he's not playing with two defensive midfielders, which I can't see happening. If he's going with three, he's hardly going to go with Guendouzi, Torreira and Xhaka. Yeah. He didn't last season. So I think that Torreira and Guendouzi are the best option, but it's looking like it's going to be one or the other between Xhaka and Torreira.
Is there too much emotion in there if you put Guendouzi and Torreira in there? They get their, you know, they're little terriers, yeah, the two of them.
Well, when you mention that, I was watching Guendouzi last week, and he was almost crying. Like he was a very, very good performer, but he was almost crying on the pitch. And maybe you're right with that.
Yeah, well, like I think eventually, I don't know how long he's going to be at Arsenal for, but there's certainly like the makings of a club captain there, because you know, he certainly has, he kind of took the bull by the horns last week and got that penalty against Villa. Kieran Tierney, you know a lot about Kieran Tierney. What are Arsenal fans in for with this guy?
Well, give him at least 6 months to get ready to get up.
The season will be over.
get up to steam. But he's a ready-made captain. You said Guendouzi's, yeah, a future captain of Arsenal. Kieran Tierney is a future captain of Arsenal as well. He's a ready-made captain. He's going to be the best, the second best, if not the best, left back in the Premier League.
From Scotland.
I would, last season when he was on form before the injury, I would have had him ahead of Robertson. Even though he's been in the Scottish League, he was still performing in the Champions League. He's brilliant getting forward, brilliant defensively, and he's a character.
He actually scores goals though. That's probably where Robertson falls down a bit, yeah, where he doesn't score enough goals for the amount of time he spends in the opposition half.
And the thing about Tierney is he's going to get compared to Robertson no matter what he does, yeah, but they're not the same player. Like, Tierney gets forward a bit. While Robertson likes to swing the ball in, Tierney's more of a cuts inside and bursts into the box and then gets the ball across the box. And I think he is a bit more about him tactically, in the sense of you could play Tierney right back and he wouldn't have an issue, whereas I think Robertson would
never
struggle
see
a bit more.
You never see left footers playing right back.
Just doesn't fit.
It just never happens.
No. And you'd always see the right and left footed centre backs, but you never see two left footed centre backs. It's just, yeah, it's something against the left footers end. I don't know what to
think. I'll throw back to the rules where you could only have three foreign players in your team.
Yeah.
Manchester United, where do we start with them?
I don't know. Just go back to your initial question about Solskjaer. Like, granted, he's probably high up that list that you mentioned about Marco Silva at this stage, but to what extent can he really be blamed? Like, I looked at that starting 11 against West Ham last weekend and I thought, what manager could get a tune out of those boys?
Yeah.
Like, it used to be United always had adverse results over the years, even at their best. But it would have been a case if the keeper had to have an unbelievable game and, you know, United have to miss loads of chances. Whereas now, teams just know if they sit in, keep it tight, and then take their chances, it's a winnable game. And Pellegrini actually made that point before the game. So in one sense, the Rochdale result is a bit of an outlier. Do you know, that can happen. I remember United losing to League One Leeds under Ferguson when they were in their pomp. And I remember
the FA Cup, yeah.
And I remember Ronaldo and Rooney going down to Burton Albion for a replay. So these things happen. But it's the result last weekend that would be most worrying for Man United fans, because you're just looking at it, you're looking at the squad depth, and you're just thinking, where's the light at the end of the tunnel here?
Yeah, and also a worry is if you're a United fan, you're looking at the West Ham team thinking you could point at a group of those players that will get into the United team. Yeah. That shouldn't be happening if you are trying to challenge for trophies, which United, that's what they want to be, yeah, doing.
Well, we said it last week that there's certain United games now that you're looking at, and a few years ago you would have said, yeah, they're, you know, might be a difficult enough fixture, but they'll get through it. Whereas now there's very few fixtures, very few teams in the Premier League where you're thinking that United can go and get a result against. West Ham was one of them. The week before, I was actually surprised that United beat Leicester.
Yeah.
So it's a real issue for them at the minute. And one of the things that would worry me is their reliance on Mason Greenwood. And while it's great to see young players coming through,
is he left-footed or right-footed?
I'm not really sure.
He took the penalty with the
three
right.
Kicks with his left foot, penalties with his right foot. What, yeah, do you think of that, Phil?
I was very impressed. That's one of the first things I noticed when I was watching the shootout the other night, because I'd seen his goal the week before against Astana, and it was, or he knocked it in with his weaker right foot.
Yeah, I thought he was. I actually thought he was left footed as well until.
Well, I think he is though.
He is, yeah. He just prefers taking penalties with his right foot, Andy.
Well, I can get behind that.
Yeah. Now I wonder, like, is that going to be the thing? But you know, if he does miss a penalty with his right foot, then he'll get slated for that. But
how
do we see it going? Bear in mind, we don't know if Pogba's going to play. Rashford and Martial look like they'll miss out as well. Looks like Luke Shaw won't be available either.
I think it'll definitely depend on how Arsenal start these games. They have a tendency to, if you look at the games against Tottenham, they start them at 100 miles an hour, but then you look at them against Liverpool or Man City, they kind of sit back a bit. So if they go all out attack at the start of the game and cause United all sorts of trouble, I think they can definitely get a result here. But if they sit back and let United just do what they want to do at Old Trafford, we could be ended up with like a 1-1 stalemate that's just boring to watch.
Yeah, well, I know Roy Keane is in the Sky studio on Monday, and every time he covers a game for them, United tend to play really badly. Now, he tends to cover a lot of the big games, so I wonder, maybe is that a sign of things to come on Monday night? Our Paddy Power special odds. Will Manchester United beat Arsenal? Money back as a free bet on all markets if United win that game. And what odds, Paddy, as well? Some of the specials to look at as well. Tottenham first half to end in a draw, 13-1. Aston Villa against Burnley over four corners each, that's 3-1. And Manchester United versus Arsenal under 1.5 goals is 4-1. I know we're coming towards the end, but just let's talk about some of the other fixtures. Chelsea and Tottenham are both in action at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Chelsea at home to Brighton, the new Brighton. Are they really that new?
Well, we were talking about it off air, and they play a nicer football, but it's no better than what Chris Hughton was providing. Granted, Chris Hughton, if you're going into this Chelsea game, you're probably looking at him putting all backs against the wall and soaking up this Chelsea pressure. But is it better to go out and attack this Chelsea side and get beaten 3-0? Like, they beat Watford 3-0 away in the first game of the season, and everyone thought this is the new era of Graham Potter.
More like Harry Potter. Yeah. That's what you're thinking, yeah?
Great football, and they're going to go out and do this to every team. But since then, they've won one game. That was against Bristol Rovers in the League Cup. They've scored 5 goals, and 2 of them came against Bristol.
Yeah.
So they're still not scoring more goals than they were under Chris Hughton, despite playing this fantastic football that they're apparently playing. The only good thing about this Brighton side this year is that there's a couple of Irish players.
Yeah, Connolly scored in that Bristol Rovers game. Was millimetres away from scoring against Newcastle. Chelsea haven't won a home game in the league under Frank Lampard. This could be just a game for them.
Yeah, and what do you think of the progression under Lampard? Because obviously the transfer ban's been well documented, and we know the players that he has at his disposal. But the cries against Sarri last season got so big that he was basically shoved out the door. He ended up being quite happy with that, landed at Juventus. But have they improved? Have the Chelsea fans got reasons to be cheerful?
It's like they're winning the PR battle.
Yeah.
Because they've got all these young players in their team now, and
he needs a result here.
He does, because they drew 2-2 with Sheffield United, a game they went 2-0 up in. They couldn't close it out. I was impressed with them in the second half against Liverpool, because they could have got an absolute hiding 2-0 down at half time. But I think Liverpool were also quite happy to sit in, which suited Chelsea. But yeah, if they don't win this game, certainly you'd feel there's a, you know, people will start going, how long can the PR spin keep going that this is great? Tottenham and Southampton, we don't really know what Southampton team will turn up, but Spurs, this is all just, it's not unravelling, that's probably too strong a word, but it's a very strange start to the season for them.
There's a bit of the boy who cried wolf about this one, I think, where Pochettino, there's been these sounds in previous seasons, but you never really read too much into it. I think this could be a turning point for them. I think he's on the brink from his own point of view, where he thinks, if I don't start getting my way a little bit more in terms of transfers or even team selection, I'm going to have to think about moving elsewhere, and there'll be plenty of takers for him. But from a Tottenham point of view, he mentioned fragments in the dressing room. That's a no-no, that's a bad sign. And it's interesting to see what he's getting at there. That'll probably come to the fore as we go along.
Yep.
Speaking of Everton signings, Dele Alli, 2 years' time.
Yeah, he's going down that route as well. A game we haven't got to look into, but Leicester-Newcastle, it's 4:30 on Sunday. It's the commentary game on News Talk. It's Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr. The Dublin duo will be there. I'd be disappointed if there's not plenty of music references in that one. That is pretty much it. It's half an hour done and dusted. The Paddy Power half hour and have a great weekend. Enjoy the football, and it's a gamble responsibly, and we will be back next week.
The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.